welcome to another episode of Shades of Us, the Review. I am Ramat. Today, I'll review another book from my Masubi collection called A Conspiracy of Ravens by Otuke Omniabo. Let's get into it. So we'll start with some facts about the book and the author, starting with the author first. Otuke Omniabo was born and raised in southern Nigeria. He's a graduate of computer science from the University of Benin. He's a writer, poet, dramatist, entrepreneur, and publisher at Masubi Books, Nigeria's fastest growing publishing company. And I'm such a fan of theirs, right? He's the author of Odufa, shortlisted for the Wole Soyinka Prize for Literature, the Association of Nigerian Authors Prize for Prose Fiction, and the Grand Prix of Literary Association in Cameroon. He also authored the acclaimed novel A Conspiracy of Ravens and Aviera. And I have all three books, bought all of them, read all of them, and I give my thumbs up to all of them. In 2024, he was named Brito Paper's Literary Person of the Year. Now, let's talk about some facts about the book. A Conspiracy of Ravens is a skillfully intertwined tale of love and hate, patriots and traitors, as well as heroes and villains. It is a true masterpiece. The book addresses the issues of Niger Delta militancy in Nigeria, the agitation for an independent state of Biafra, and the terrorist activities of Boko Haram. This may explain why it was titled A Conspiracy, right? It was published by Masubi Books. It is in English, and the hardcover can be found to have 339 pages. For critical review on Amazon, it has an average rating of 4.5 out of 5. And on Goodreads, it has an average rating of 3.89 out of 5. And I'm going to read some of the critique that's been given. First is, this book was so well put together and perfectly executed with no silly mistakes. It was sophisticated yet easy to read. The storyline is so engaging. I could not put it down. Many twists and turns, fast paced too. I finished it quickly. It was like watching a classic action thriller. 10 over 10, highly recommend. And I do agree with this review. It was so well put together. The pace was so good. I think I read it in 3 days of, you know, me working, doing all of my things and still, you know, digesting the book as I was going through my life, right? Another review says, open quote, "It is very difficult to review this book without spoilers, but I'll try. It took me about 5 days to read it, and it is simply because I did not want it to be over too soon. It's a political thriller book, and I love it. Action-packed, a thick plot with several levels and a lot of characters to keep up with." And when you get into the book, oh, that plot, that thickness this person mentioned, you would see what they're talking about. It was so well-rounded. The action was actioning. It was really going. So what is the storyline for A Conspiracy of Ravens? Well, in the Niger Delta creeks of southern Nigeria, 9 expatriates are being held hostage by militants fighting for control over the resources from their land. At the same time, a series of seemingly unconnected events rock the country. Alex Randa, an agent of the Department of State Services, a celebrated hostage negotiator with a compelling record of successes, is tasked by the president to secure the release of the hostages and to also uncover the sponsors behind the militants. With nothing to go on but the phrase Operation Raven, her instincts, and 3 unlikely allies, Alex quickly learns that nothing is what it seems. Together, they must race against time to save not just the hostages, but a nation on the brink of a bloody civil war. And that's the storyline. When you get into it, you see all the interconnectedness of the things that were happening. I was reading and had my heart pounding, like, and I was wondering, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Until the very end, I read that book with my blood pressure slightly up, right? And I'm going to go into my favorite aspects of the book right now. First will have to be the description of the waterways in chapter 2 on page 50. I'm going to read a snippet of it. "The commandos looked grim and uptight. Too anxious to sit, most stood, observing the water as it parted for the sharp noises of the furious boats. The sea surged with preternatural vitality, stretching out at the initial stage of the journey to join several estuaries of smaller creeks that littered the horizon like a ten-tailed beast. Now, there was nothing in sight but an impossible body of water, an endless stretch of disarming blue sky, and seagulls that screeched in between, circling the men most likely searching for food. Tyree pulled out a flask from his haversack and gulped a mouthful of water. The reports brought back by the two scouts he had sent out yesterday were disheartening. The rig was crawling with soldiers. So much was riding on a plan that was as reckless as it was audacious. The reason I loved the description of the water was like, if they were heading to the rig, right, and, you know, they needed to get there, and it was crawling with soldiers, what were they going to do in this open sea? It was described as this really open body of water that anybody could see at any point. They were risking their lives. And I saw that vulnerability being represented, and I said, oh, they are so open. There's nowhere to hide. You can't go into the sea to hide because you die. If you head to the rig and the soldiers, you can be shot. And for me, it was such a tense moment, not just because of the action, but because of the fact that the water and the clear blue skies, which meant everything was out there in the open, was that, okay, this was very risky. This was scary, and it could really go wrong for them. So that was what was communicated to me in that scene. In my second favorite aspect of the book, I would have to say is the call to revolution for the Ogoni people in chapter 13 on page 112, right? I'll take a snippet too. He walked into the crowd, peering intently at the faces of the men and women. They peered back at him, their faces eager and trusting. Think of your children and your children's children. What will become of their future if we fail to make a stand against oil exploration in Ogoni land today? The call for the proper management of gas flaring, which has been a major issue since the beginning of oil exploration on land, has gone unheeded like all that has been placed before leaders. He paused, allowing the silence to deepen his words. This is why I promise a second peaceful march to the capital. We will hire buses and return to the nation's capital where our fathers went many years ago on this same quest. And there, in front of their closed gate, we shall lay our beds. The crowd erupted in wild cheering. They must listen to us. The God of Elijah shall fight for us and our children too. And again, this was heavy for me because I'd worked in the Niger Delta on a project that was trying to address some of the issues that was as a direct result of oil exploration and militancy in the region. And I did see how terrible these things were. I did see how bad it was that the region that was in essence making Nigeria have whatever income we're getting at this point was one of the least developed regions in this country. It was unfair to the region. It was unfair that development was so bad. But I sort of learned that it wasn't just because Nigerian government was bad. It was because Nigerian government was bad and the leaders of the people in southern Nigeria, where this oil was found, where the crude was found, were as bad as the people that were leading us as a country. And I felt really sad because it's one thing to have bad governments, bad governance. It's another thing to have, like, you know, your leaders who are supposed to stand for you, who are supposed to be the voice of reason and stand up to the government, being equally bad. So it was important that he rallied the people. And I love the part where they said, you know, he let his silence deepen his message. Because sometimes it's not just the words. Sometimes silence is enough to convey the power of the message we want to put out. And I really, really, absolutely love this part. It was a call to action. And I have been a supporter of better practices in drilling oil in the south-south part of Nigeria. It is unfair that they are, in essence, making Nigeria the country that we are, but they have the least development or one of the worst developmental indices across the country. It is sad. I've been to all 9 Niger Delta states, and when you go, sometimes it's like, wow, really? Is this the region that really is taking care of Nigeria? It is sad. But let me get back to it, and we'll come to my third favorite part of the book, which was the hope Tari had when he was told the government was finally listening to them. If you can read this on pages 305 and 306. Now you might think this is a spoiler, but it's not the spoiler you think it's going to be. Until you read the end to the end of the book, then you understand that this is really not the spoiler it sounds like, right? But I'll read a part of the book. Bros, Garuba came running. What is it? Breathless, he held up his transistor radio. Government on the answer. What did they say? They don't give us 2 days to accept presidential pardon to surrender and release the hostage or face them. What till we go do? For the first time as the leader and commander of the FNDIC, Tariq Amesionde felt a litany of emotions, the least of which was the raging confusion that rendered him incapable of thought. This is why I tell you it wasn't the spoiler that it sounded like it was going to be. There was more that happened afterwards. But again, one thing that we have learned, especially for someone like me who has actually protested bad governance in this country, it's that there are times when the government does look like they're listening, but it's not what it's called out to be or pointed out to be. Sometimes it's a show and it means absolutely nothing. And we've seen that consistently from the government. And it's since I had my political awakening, I realized that for many instances, protest and even violence, for example, does not necessarily mean the government will capitulate. A good government may capitulate and do the right thing, but we haven't been led by good governments, good personnel, good people in a while. We have really been led by people who are selfish, who do not care for us as a people, who do not care for us as a nation, who are bent on ruining us as they fatten their own coffers. So it is a problem to me, right, to have, you know, read this and to have it remind me of the reality of things in Nigeria. And then finally, I will look at the road to the finale on page 377. Is somewhere that I also absolutely love. And I'm going to read a snippet, right? He dropped his pistol in his waistband and grabbed the AK-47, eyes scanning the skies. The men cocked their guns. Garuba looked warily at the stranger. "You don't lead government come here, B," he barked. "You and your government people go die here today." He stepped back and cocked his gun. Colin watched his finger. "Get down," he screamed. The explosions, peppered with bursts of shellings from M19 submachine guns, were deafening. Large caliber bullets tore through leaves and trees, leaving gaping holes and badly wounded barks. Men were flung into the air, their bodies torn to shreds as the jets passed. The night was suddenly lit up with sparks and blinding flashes of light and erupting trails of flames. Having flown one of those planes, Colin knew the routine of the F-18s. They had less than 2 minutes before the bomber jets made a U-turn. I was reading this and I had my heart in my mouth. You can see how sober I have sort of become as I remember that story. I think you should read it to see why this was important and why it stayed with me for as long as it did. And that's all I'm going to say about it. If I were to talk about what I didn't like about this, not that I didn't like it, but it made me think about how close to home the story was. The realization, like I've mentioned, that the government cannot be trusted. The realization that, you know, lives can be wasted if profit is the thing to be made. The realization that there are a couple of people who are moving chess pieces and causing violence across the world, but particularly Nigeria, with no regard for the people who have the resources, or just for the people, for the sake of them being people. And that's it stayed with me for a long time. And that is a testament to how well written A Conspiracy of Ravens was by Otuke Omniabo. So A Conspiracy of Ravens was the first action-packed novel by a Nigerian author that truly kept me on the edge of my seat. From the very first page, it became a page-turner that I couldn't put down. The kind of book that grabs your attention and doesn't let go until the final word. As someone who's worked in the Niger Delta, I found it especially compelling how the author tackled the issues of militancy and resource control in the region. The reality of the Niger Delta struggles, the violence, the exploitation, the fight for power, was captured with such rawness and authenticity. I've witnessed firsthand how the effects of militancy rippled through communities, and A Conspiracy of Ravens didn't shy away from that complexity. It painted a picture that was both vivid and heartbreaking, drawing attention to the human toll behind the headlines. What stood out for me the most was the way the book seamlessly weaved the action-packed thriller aspect with the underlying socio-political context. It wasn't just about hostage negotiations and the high-stakes missions. It also highlighted the systemic issues that are fueling the unrest, which made the story feel grounded in real-world problems. The urgency of the plot felt so real because it was anchored in the struggles of a people. And generally, because South Southerners are not removed from being Nigerians, so it was also the struggle of us as a nation and, you know, where we faced a tipping point. Thankfully, the militancy in the South South region has sort of dwindled. It hasn't ended, and that's us being as honest as possible. It hasn't ended, but it has dwindled from what it was years ago where it was a problem. The only sad thing is, as that dwindled, the political moves and the people who move the chess pieces and all of that, they've moved to other places and made other places so insecure. So Nigeria as a whole is such an insecure place, and it is sad for those of us who are here and have to live through the fear of being Nigerian, of going, you know, driving down from one state to the other, of driving even within states, of, you know, there's just this huge insecurity in the country that is disheartening. Anyway, I'm going to rate the book an 8 over 10. I think it was really good. I think it's something that every Nigerian and everyone African should read to understand, to give you maybe some context to the complexities of a militancy, of people who take up resources from your country and what have you. I'm not big on saying, you know, we shouldn't take out some of the resources and make money, but there has to be ethical ways for things to be done, and that takes into context the people, their land, their resources, and then the overall good of the people. So yeah, I rated an 8 over 10, but that's my opinion. What do you think about A Conspiracy of Ravens? Have you read it? Do you like the book? What are your favorite and least favorite parts of the book? Please share your views in the comment section, and remember, you can select the book that I can review for next week, and I'll jump on that for you. So I will end the show right about here. Please listen to the end of the podcast to find out ways that you can contact us, and do not forget to tune in every Thursday at 1:05 p.m. on our platforms. It's hugs and kisses from Ramat. Bye.
That is a wrap on today's podcast. Like us on Facebook or LinkedIn at Shades of Us, or you could follow us on Twitter at Shades of Us Afrique, and on Instagram at Shades of Us Africa. Tell us any song, album, movie, TV show, book, or other kinds of art you think would make for a great review. Send us an email at shadesofusafrica@gmail.com or a WhatsApp message at +234 905 912 7552. Thank you for listening. Bye.